I'd like to call the Transportation Finance Division to order, and Representative Nelson moves at minutes of March 25th. Is that right, Representative Nelson?
Hey, Nelson, you gotta approve.
Nelson, you've been called on to approve the minutes.
So moved, Mr. Chairman. They look excellent to me.
They look good. And all of them look, are there any corrections or adjustments to the minutes? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. Minutes are adopted. We'll continue with House File 3301, and Representative Kalin says he has expedited it, and looks like he's got about five amendments. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, we have two amendments that are the result of significant movement over the last 22 hours or less, 21 and a half hours. Two of the amendments are mine, and then I believe the Representative Holbert has an amendment she'd like to offer that I'll accept as well. I guess I'd like to first offer the, I don't know if we need to move the bill to have it before us again.
No, we have the bill before.
We have the bill before us, great. Then I'll offer the A4 amendment and actually ask Mr. Burris to explain. This is a technical one, if Mr. Burris could explain it.
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chairman, members, the A4 amendment does some additional cleanup. Removes the reference to subdivision 2, which is being repealed in the bill.
Any questions on the amendment? If not, all in favor of the amendment A4, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. The amendment is adopted. Do you have another amendment?
And then, Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A6 amendment, and I'll explain, and this is the heart of the movement over the last 22 hours here. We believe that a prudent step would be to remove the requirement for releasing the audio recordings of the meetings with proposers. And so that would take out all of Section 1, which is the first of the three things that the A6 Amendment does. Secondly, the cap on the maximum difference between the lowest responsive bidder and the winning allowable bidder, we've changed from 115% to 120%. Just to remind members that we started at 110% when we started the bill yesterday. So we've gone quite far there. And then the third compromise piece is, I call it the kicker. I think my friends in ABC calls it the minimum item, but that 120% cap would only apply to projects with a cost of, with a value of now $25 million rather than $10 million. I think that's a prudent step. I think if you're doing a $12 million project, I think.
Representative Kalin, I'm just checking. We didn't have a delete all. That doesn't seem to check on Alliance. Does it?
I believe that
it's on the amendment.
Okay. It is on the amendment, yeah. Yes. Again, Mr. Chair, I think if you're doing an $11 or $12 million project, I think that 120% cap may be a little too tight, so we want to leave a little flexibility where necessary, but also want to make sure that, as I said yesterday, if we're building fast, safe, and cheap, and only choose two of those three, that we're not writing a blank check. I think that's an old NASA thing there, Commander Stevenson, but
Representative Kalin, so these were controversial yesterday. I wonder if some of the testifiers, we need to bring them in before we move this amendment?
Happy to do so, Mr. Chair. I believe that on the AGC side, that I don't think that Mr. Werke feels any need to testify. He's here to answer questions, but
I think if they just indicated, we don't need to bring them up, but because that was controversial with three or four.
Yeah, I think that I think Mr. Oxley from the engineers would like to speak briefly, and then I believe that I imagine Betsy Parker from MnDOT would like to speak briefly as well.
Okay. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kalin, I have a question on your the recording issue, I believe, and I know that we're working off amendments to amendments,
uh-huh.
But on page 2 of the original bill, lines 19 and 20, it talks about an audio recording. Is it your intent that you want the recording but that it remain confidential, or what? I don't understand why that's still there.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbert, I actually would like to hear from MnDOT on their feelings about that specific position. Right now, I've decided to not move to take it out yet, but I think I would like to hear from them on that language, and we'll take it from there.
Okay, Representative Holger.
Thank you, Mr. Yeah. Chair.
Mr. Oxley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'm David Oxley, Executive Director of the American Council of Engineering Companies in Minnesota. We think this amendment that moves up this up to 120% is definitely an improvement. It's still short of what we had expected. We were looking at $150 million to $100 million exemption. So I can't say we support it, but I honestly can't say we're going to oppose it at this point. I've got a committee meeting of my members tomorrow on Thursday, at which point I think I'll have a much better answer. Unfortunately, blackberries don't move as fast as the legislature, I found, so I'm having difficulty getting those answers.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Oxley. It's kind of tough to get everybody on the same page. I don't realize that. Any further questions about the amendment, Representative Beard?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kalin. And this might go to the larger bill, but on the amendment where you, and I'm scrambling here to find where all the paperwork's flying, but we went to 120, a thought that I had as I was thinking about this at 4 o'clock this morning, thank you very much, but you know, we had, and I'm looking for the criteria, it's not in the bill, but it's, oh, here, it's on the handout that Ms. Parker gave us about the selection process. There's five criteria. I noticed that price is not one of the criteria that we put in the matrix. Would it be accomplished what we're trying to do here to actually put price in there as for one of the considerations and make it a percentage of the total consideration as opposed to putting a numeric cap on what the spread can be between high and low bids that come in? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, your question goes right to the heart of the dilemma between the mm-hmm. two paradigms on how to address this issue of not writing a total blank check mm-hmm. and putting some sort of limit on having some sort of assessment of yeah. price without it being the lowest bid. And mm-hmm. We've been talking with the contractor. I've been talking with the contractors for about 5 or 6 months, mm-hmm. Going around and around on this issue. If you look at the existing language in the existing bill, that it's paragraph C on the bottom of page 4, so line 4.23 and go on, there's actually a, rather than having what you're suggesting is including the price as a component of the technical review score, the technical score, what the existing statute allowed for is for time factor to be included as part of the mm-hmm. RFP package,
mm-hmm.
It ends up being a little bit even more amorphous the existing way. But then imagine how, if you read through the existing language, it's quite difficult to wrap your brain around. It's difficult to get formula into language as it is. I think Mr. Burris is probably a magician enough already, but I don't know that we could reduce a very, very complicated formula that would put it into the technical score and have it satisfactory, understandable, and clear. And I think what we want is to have very clear rules of the game, and this, I believe, is the easiest way to have clear rules of the game. Does that answer your question, Representative Beard? I'm not sure it does.
Representative Beard?
Well, kind of. You're kind of heading in the right direction. I was distracted by just a technical thing on line 4.21 of the original bill, 3301-1.
Yes.
Is that 110% need to be adjusted upward also?
That is, Mr. Chair, that is actually the provision that, and Representative Beard, that number is changed by the amendment to 120%.
Okay, I'm looking at the A6 amendment. It's page 1, line 18.
Of the A3 amendment.
Of the A3, when the yeah. A3 did the other, oh, yeah. All right. Well, yeah, it kind of, Mr. Chair, it did kind of touch on it. I'm glad to see the time factor is here. That was in the original language of the design build. And I got to tell you, tend to be a fan of the design build process. Whatever we're doing here today or trying to do, I know it's in reaction to a unusual and difficult to explain award, but I want to be sure that we don't end up shooting ourselves in the foot mm-hmm. with the best of intentions. I think moving to 120 is a step in the right direction, but I'm just wondering if making price one of the criteria would be a better way to go about that. And perhaps, Mr. Chairman, that would be, maybe I'm going to cover ground that happened back in, when, 99 or 2000, when we first put design build into play. I'm sure there was an enormous amount of discussion around these technical criteria and how we're going to weight them and what we include and what we don't. I'm sure that somebody must have deliberately left price out of that consideration at the time when this was originally drafted. And perhaps if anybody has any institutional memory about that, maybe they can enlighten us before we go any further. Follow me?
Beard, maybe we should bring up an opponent and proponent if we have so many of the people that you have representing KLN.
But I think
we have one from each.
Mr. Werke was involved in the original drafting of the bill that was passed and enacted in 2001. Mm-hmm. So I think that he might be able to answer that and give some background and some insight, and then I think Ms. Parker might be able to provide a counterpoint or a different perspective. I don't even know if it's an A or B counterpoint.
Mr. Werke.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. I'm Tim Werke from the Associated General Contractors. Representative Beard, if I heard your question correctly, price is already taken into consideration in the base formula in that in determining the lowest adjusted score, which gives you the winner, you divide the price by the technical score. So the two components in the base formula has your technical score, and you score the proposal, and then you set that aside, and then you open the price, and you divide your price by your technical score. And the winner, then, is the team with the lowest adjusted score. And what we're proposing in this formula change, then, is to set that aside and then do a final price check and say the team that now is the lowest adjusted score apparent winner, let's make sure that their score is not more than 120% of the lowest responsive bidder's price and their price submittal over here. So there's really two kind of distinct processes. I think I have that correct.
Captain Beer.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Okay, I think I'm getting my mathematical part of my brain around that. So it will be possible to have a low price but a very low technical score, which would, when you divide that in, would give you a high multiplier versus a higher price with a very high technical score, which would give you a lower multiplier. Therefore, that would be considered the best value if you use that technique. That's what you're saying,
Mr. Werke.
If that, Chairman, Representative Beard, I believe so. I would have to defer to the technicians at MnDOT to do all of
this. I think that helps us understand how we get to this and why value doesn't have to be actually written down here in this language. And now, my next question then is, if the 120% rule is put into play, how's that going to work? What do we do if somebody is 120.5 or 130 even? Does that mean that that high number is automatically thrown out and we have to go with the next one? Is that what we're going to be directed to do by this legislation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, that would be my understanding of what our intent would be, that in order to control the price and the role that price plays relative to the technical score, that this cap that's being proposed here would provide that level of protection to say that, and I'll use the number here, on a $200 million project, that you would have $40 million, 120% of the, you'd have potentially $40 million of play, of value that you could find within that number.
Representative Beard, got it.
I'm just pondering what that means, Mr. Chair.
If I could, Mr. Chair, I think this might help, as Representative Beard is pondering, and I was probably on the inverse. I didn't get to sleep until 3 o'clock last night, so we probably pulled double duty during the night. I'm not an architect, but I've worked as a designer and draftsman and worked both as a student helping out on competitive projects and then also bidding on some in professional life. And what the first thing that I've experienced that one does is study the rules of the competition. So what's the formula that on which you're going to be scored? And so I think that having price be not the only factor, but not an ignored factor,
but just something that needs to be aware of as you're going through the design piece. I think you're going to always be aware of how you're going to be scored and having just a clear expectation of what those scores are going to be. And so I think there's going to be some designing to the formula as already happened, but I think just being conscious of the fact that there's going to be this kicker and you just need to watch that you're not going to be too exorbitant. You're not going to be an outlier, either too low or too high.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could try to be too low and sort of game the system, I suppose, but if you're so low on a technical score, it's going to end up being a real issue as well, and thus be a non-responsive bidder as well. You know, you got to make it safe and
quick. Mr. Chair, this is helpful to the discussion because, like I say, my name is on this bill and I want it to stay there. I'm very concerned that we protect the design build flexibility that the department has been able to use to great success on several other projects. But I am concerned about how we got the wild swing on the 35W project. Let's just let this move ahead from my perspective and keep working at it.
Mr. Work, it's my understanding that your group understands that they could be cast out by this procedure. Or lose, basically, is my understanding, correct?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, our members are well aware and well-versed in the rigidity, if you will, of the bid process. And if there is an error, an omission, a mistake, et cetera, that's how the game is played. And as long as they know that, and they would then be subsequently dismissed from consideration of winning the proposal, as long as everybody knows up front and it's made clear of what the expectations are in the RFP and what matters are of material significance to those proposers, my members don't have a problem with that type of rigidity. I just wanted to point out for clarity for Representative Beard, back to that issue of the price cap, that it's our understanding that you would then, if a proposer was knocked out because of that price restriction, you would go to the second proposed bidder and apply the same test, or the department always has the option of canceling all bids and redoing the proposal process.
Representative Kalin? Representative Hoover?
Well, Mr. Chair, and to that point, isn't it very problematic in a design-build process to cancel and start over once everybody's cards are on the table? I mean, isn't that part of the uniqueness of design-build, and that you really get into problems if you would cancel everything and start over?
Mr. Werke.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holbrook, committee members, I'm not that well versed in that process, but if the elements, the significant elements of the proposals are not released as public information, for instance, on the low bid side, if they do not release the bid abstract, which tells everybody what your unit prices were that you bid for culvert, guardrail, bituminous paving, whatever it is. If that information is not released, then I don't have access to my competitors' numbers and it's not compromised. I would expect, it's my understanding that there would be something similar that would be done here. I'm not the expert on that. I'd have to defer to
Representative Holbrook. And Mr. Chair, just as long as we have you up here, yesterday we heard testimony that depending on what this bill looks like and if it becomes law, there's a risk that that MnDOT will just not use design build, that they'll just decide that this is not going to work. Is the organization that you represent, are they aware of that and that's an okay consequence as a result of this legislation? I'm just trying to get a feel for, is that the intent of your organization to kill design build? Do you like it? Is it going to be a negative if because of this law being passed, nothing goes under design build anymore? Talk to us a little bit about those issues.
Mr. Worthy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holbrook, committee members, that is a concern. And I believe I let off my comments yesterday in informing the committee that our organization is a champion of design build and believes it needs to continue if we're to be successful in delivering the 2008 transportation funding package. That being said, there are significant concerns of our members about the process, and that it be that the changes that we have reflected in this bill be enacted to provide a more comfort and level playing field for them to compete on. And I think we would find it a very difficult proposition if nothing were to change and we were to move forward and have to continue to operate under the same type of environment that has been visited on us with the procurement for the 35 bridge. That being said, as well, there are, I believe, there's things that have been learned from that process that will be put into play. But it we feel some of those things need to be put into the law, because people change, administrations change, various aspects of the process or the application of the process could change. So we feel that there's some comfort brought to our members by making some of these changes.
And Mr. Chair, I mean, I'm struggling with this, with the large infusion of bonding money in the next 2 years as a result of the transportation bill that passed. I think using design build could accelerate some really important projects. If, in fact, we pass this and MnDOT resort to designing everything themselves, then they're not going to be able to get projects on the ground. I mean, I don't know about this building season, where if they use design build, certainly there's a lot of hungry contractors out there that would be, you know, raring to go with some really nice projects pretty quickly under that. So, I mean, I'm struggling here because I'm trying to ascertain, because of the characteristics of the 35W bridge, is that such a unique situation that the results will never be replicated again, given its uniqueness. I don't want to, put a arrow into the heart of design build just when we're on the cusp of a period of time in transportation project delivery where it could be a very, very useful tool in getting stuff out pretty quickly and letting the taxpayers see some results as a result of the extra taxes. So I'm struggling with this.
Well, Representative Holberg, if I may point out, myself and Senator Murphy have been meeting with the interim commissioner 3 times already and are fully aware of it, and we want to expedite it, and I think that MnDOT feels that way too. It's not my impression here that we should be deterring design build at all, I don't think. I think that's what you're saying too, isn't it? Mr. Worker, do you want to comment?
Representative Holbert, I've struggled with those same issues because I have not been a fan of design build, but recognize a very strong need for it that was highlighted, of course, Thursday afternoon when Representative Severson's constituents and those around him were their lives were disrupted by the closure of the 23 bridge in St. Cloud, and we're going to need to fast track that replacement it's going to need to be replaced. If it can't be repaired in the meantime, we're going to need to fast track that replacement. Design build is the very tool that's going to be needed. One of the issues that I heard from MnDOT during the discussion of this bill was that the 35W bridge will never again see a situation like it. We certainly pray that we won't with the fatalities, but there's going to be a lot of pressure not only on Representative Severson and the elected officials from the St. Cloud area, but on the legislature and on MnDOT to fast track that bridge as soon as possible. Will it rise to the same pressure as 35W? Hopefully not. I don't think so. But at the same time, it's going to be a high-pressure, high-priority project. And so I think that having just a few responsible checks, that I believe that if we adopt the A6 amendment, this bill will now represent, and I think your amendment also is a good change, a good addition to it. And I'm committed, I think that it will continue to be a tool that MnDOT should be able to use responsibly, that will protect the fiscal interests of the state, but also be able to get these projects done as soon as possible.
So I feel comfortable right now that the bill does it, but I will continue to work with Mr. Werke and ABC, with the engineers and with MnDOT to resolve any remaining issues, minor or major, because I want design-build to remain a tool that's available. I just don't want to have more 35W outliers where, you know, where we hear so much of the backlash about why is this being used.
I think maybe we could get MnDOT up.
I think so, Mr. Chair.
Chairman, if I could have one last comment, because I think it's important to Representative Holbert's point. We still have design-build. There is design-build low bid that could be used. So if there was a necessity to move a project ahead, our members are perfectly comfortable with the design-build low bid process. That could be used. So.
Thank you. Someone from MnDOT? Welcome to the committee, Ms. Parker. You understand the question better than I do.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. I think there were several questions.
Right.
I'll try to start with the most recent, or maybe they were statements. The department has used design-build low bid, and the current feeling in the department is that we will never use it again. It was not satisfactory. We did not get the quality of work we wanted. And after that time, at the time we used it, I believe we did not have the design build law that we have now. We have not used design build low bid since the design build law was enacted in 2001. It's an entirely different kind of approach, and we didn't like it. We've been using the law since 2002. We've had very good success, very good value, happy travelers, happy communities in all of the places where we've used the current design-build law. There's been no problem raised with it until the 35W bridge collapsed and we had suddenly to replace that bridge. I don't think you've heard people complain that it was wrongly used on the Rock 52 project, on 212, on 10 up in our District 4, on 494, which was done by one of the proposers that was not selected, on 35W. We've been happy with the work we've received on all those projects. We see no reason to change it. And I think one of the things that concerns us most is that, and Representative Deere, this was something you said. You commented on the wild swings on the scoring on 35W, and we simply feel that there were no wild swings, and that we do have all of the information about the scoring on our website. You could look at every single proposer's score on every single criteria. It would take you a little while to go to the website and actually look through it. You could probably do it in 30 minutes. And I know that that's probably not good enough for the public and for everyone, because it takes some effort to go do that, to figure out what links to follow. I have with me a tabulation of the scores today, and if you look at these scores, you will see that we have a process in place. And if you wanted, at some point, you know, after deadline, we could make a presentation of like 1 through 10 or whatever of exactly how this thing was scored, because it was scientific. It was disclosed what the percentages would be for each of the criteria and what was desired from each proposer. And there were teams that looked at each of the criteria individually. There were 6 scorers, 4 of them from MnDOT, 1 from the Associated General Contractors, and 1 from the City of Minneapolis, because the bridge was in Minneapolis. And they heard from the specialist teams about the issues related to structures and geometric enhancements, and then each of those scorers went individually and all by themselves scored the proposal. And then their scores were checked by someone to make sure that there was nothing unusual about them, and then they were tabulated. But they did their scoring without consulting each other. And if you look at this see, you will see that every single one of the six scorers, including the AGC member, scored Flatiron Mansion the highest. And you can see that there is consistency in the way that the criteria were scored. And so it concerns us to keep hearing these accusations that there was wild scoring and things that are not explainable. It is all explainable, but it is not maybe easily explainable, and it requires actually looking at something. And if the page could pass this out, I don't mean to talk about this any more than just to offer this to you.
That's what I was concerned about. We aren't here really to determine the merits of that. We're trying to pass a different bill, and I've given you a lot of latitude, and I appreciate that, as long as you can work it into what's going on in this bill. But I think we have to get moving on this bill, too.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, actually, I can work it into what's going on in this bill, because the allegations in the lawsuit are that we did not reject an unresponsive bidder, and the scoring process and the department determined that all the proposers were responsive. And probably through an explanation, that could all be explained, but it is the disagreement between the department and the losing proposers that gave rise to the need, the feeling that some people have, that the law needs to be amended to take away the discretion from the department, first of all with respect to determining whether or not responders or proposers are responsive, and secondly, because of the difference in the prices of these proposals in the 35W Bridge case, to cap the prices so that we do not have the latitude to choose a price proposal that is a certain percent above the lowest proposal. And I don't know if we'll ever have another contract situation where we have that kind of difference in the price proposals. But if we do, and if we do have similar differences in the scoring and in the qualifications that the proposers bring to the table, I think that if that project were in your district, you would want us to choose the person that we think is best qualified. And I would only qualify that by saying that in every case we look to make sure that the price is a price that is within a certain percentage of MnDOT's estimate. For us, the important thing is not the cheapest price proposal. That's not our bottom line. Our main concern is what is MnDOT's estimate and how do the price proposals relate to that, because that's what determines our budget. That's what we've used to figure out what is the probable cost, which of course is more difficult with design bid than with design build than with low bid, because we haven't done the plans. But it is because of our desire to be able always to choose on the best value for the project, for the community, for the state, that we continue to not be able to accept this price cap and to continue to be opposed to an effort to limit our ability to determine for ourselves who are responsive bidders based on the responses to the proposals.
Ms. Parker, how are you addressing the Amendment A6?
Representative Kalin has asked that I speak to the audio on page 2, and I see that you have removed the data practices provision that would make it not public until the project is awarded, and but have retained the provision that we still must create an audio recording of each meeting. We are still opposed to that provision just because of the extreme difficulty of trying to police it internally. I see that it says each meeting that is scheduled or described in the RFP, but I don't think that we describe or schedule meetings in the RFP other than that there's an interview with every team after they have submitted their proposal. And I think I have said before that we would be willing to talk about whether the interview with the selection team should be recorded. That would be one meeting. And it's our understanding, and it hasn't been, I guess we really need to check this out, but we haven't done so yet, whether the State Designer Selection Board records the interviews that they conduct with the teams after the proposals are submitted to the state. But to have any other kind of meeting there are all kinds of meetings that MnDOT people go to that are scheduled or whatnot. The conversations, there are just so many conversations. There are so many face-to-face questions asked about this. It would only take one occasion where we fail to record something, and then would we be in violation of the law, and would we throw out all bids? I mean, the question really is, how is this to be interpreted and enforced, and what is the remedy if it is violated? And having to go through the solicitation again would add 6 to 8 months to the project time.
Representative Taylor, we've got to move along. Yeah. We've got a bunch of amendments, and we're kind of getting
absolutely
pretty extreme.
Mr. Chair, I actually wanted to hear Ms. Parker's specific concerns about that. About that section, I think it's a little more limited than what she's describing, but I think given our efforts to come to a bill that that the department can live with and that we can all support, I'd like to incorporate into the A6 amendment deleting the new language on lines 2.19 and 2.20.
You are proposing an oral amendment again?
Yes.
On what would you refer
to? It would be an oral amendment to the A6 amendment, so in addition to the A6 amendment, to delete the new language on lines 2.19 and 2.20.
What's he doing with that?
I think we'll have Mr. Burris repeat that. I think you're referring, you're going to put that on the A6. It refers back to the original amendment.
That's correct.
Mr. Burris, can you clarify that for us?
Which one is the other?
Mr. Chair, I might ask Representative Thielen to repeat that.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Burris, on lines, on page 2, lines 2.19 and 2.20, just removing the new language.
Mr. Chair and members, then the oral amendment would be page 2, lines 19 to 20, delete the new language.
And Mr. Chair and members, I would just note that Ms. Parker and I are having a highly detailed conversation here that we're pulling out the calculator, but we think it would actually eliminate the fiscal impact of the bill as well, since it was all based on the recording.
And then, Kalen, does that affect line 1.4 and 1.5 on the amendment? Is that what you're telling me?
On the
A6 amendment?
It does not. It does not.
Any questions on the Burris or the oral amendment from Representative Kalen?
If we could just incorporate that into the A6 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, have we already adopted the A3 amendment?
Yesterday.
Okay. And now we're amending the bill as amended.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Any questions on the oral amendment? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary. The oral amendment is adopted. Now, Ms. Parker, have you pretty much said what you want to say about the A6 amendment?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would just like to say that I know how much everyone would like to see the department come to an agreement with Representative Kalen and with the AGC. And I think that we really do try to work things out with bill authors and with stakeholders in all of our processes. And we really do like to try to work things out. But this is a matter of very great importance to the department in its contracting. And we still feel that we cannot agree to the two issues that we have, I think, been forthright about all along as being sort of the things that put a stop to this for us, which are the restriction on the determination of responsiveness and the cap on the price. There were a number of other things that we had agreed to before we even got to the hearing yesterday. And we stand by those, but these two things are just serious problems for the department.
Well, Ms. Parker, if I may say, I think I got the feel of the committee. They presume that we're not trying to kill design build. We want to see it move. And the alternative is not to pass this bill and continue under an existing statute. Now, that's the question we have. So I think that's what the committee members should recognize. There are no questions of Ms. Parker?
Well,
not?
Mr. Chairman, I would just like to say that we would very much like to proceed under the existing law.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Parker. I think we had a testimony from either side. Are there questions on the amendment? Not everybody's ready for the question. All in favor of the amendment A6, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? The amendment is adopted. Do you have another amendment?
I believe Representative Holbrook has the A5 amendment.
Mr. Chair, the A5 amendment just tries to deal with the testimony that we heard from the Department of Administration about the mandatory 7-day waiting period on page 5 of the bill. And this would just allow for that waiting period to be waived if all of the responsible bidders were in agreement. So in other words, if there was no controversy, people wanted to get moving toward the contract, the MnDOT would have the ability to do that.
Mr. Representative Kalen, you want to comment?
I appreciate Representative Holbrook's amendment, and I'd ask members to support it.
Well, that's right. You moved the amendment. I didn't catch that. Didn't you, Representative Holbrook, A5 amendment?
I didn't.
Any questions of the author or the both authors? If not, all in favor of the A5 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? Amendment A5 is adopted. Is there another amendment? Do you have another amendment? Representative Kalen?
I don't have any myself. I don't see any others.
If not, are there questions in the bill? Mm-hmm. Not all in favor of passing House File 3301 and referring it to the Finance Division as amended. 3301 as amended and referred to the Finance Division. Say aye.
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 Contrary?
No.
No.
The bill is adopted as amended. It's sent to Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Next bill is Representative Slocum, 3965. By the way, there are fiscal notes in all these bills in your packet, I believe.
You still got $60,000
a year. Something you needed, Representative Slocum? Well, is this your amendment?
I'm going to run my other committee real quick. I'll be right back. Thank
you. Well, he's passing it out, Representative Slocum. You move House File 3965, recommended pass as amended, I suppose, and sent to Finance? Okay. We have the House File 3965 before it. Representative Slocum.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members, this bill came to me essentially from a constituent. He's a license plate collector, and he would like to have a World War I license plate, veterans license plate. And you can't get it unless you can't get a special plate like that unless you are a veteran of that war. Well, you'd have to be, there aren't any left veterans of World War I anymore, and so there are approximately 20 sets of license plates that are sitting at MnDOT that are not being used that collectors could use, or would certainly like to get their hands on. So, I have this drafted, and this is basically for collectors. I have an amendment, and you have it in front of you in much neater printing than what I had.
You want to move the amendment? Representative Slocum?
I'd like to move the amendment.
Representative Slocum moves the amendment B1?
Yes, on page 1, line 17, after the word delete cell license and insert, discontinue the sale of any unused special veterans license plate type. Remaining stock of discontinued special veterans plates must be transferred to the Department of Veterans Affairs. The Department of Veterans Affairs must collaborate with charitable veteran organizations to auction the plates.
The rest is.
And then we're deleting 18 through 24 on page 1, and then on page 2, lines 1 and 2. Then page 2, line 7.
Representative Slocum, could I just have Mr. Burris give a quick summary as a deletion?
That'd be great. That's Mr. fine. Burris? We're almost done. I've got about one line left here.
Oh. Either way, unless you think you got it.
Let me just finish real
okay.
quick. What happens then is the any money made from the auctioning of these plates then is deposited in the we're deleting depositing in vehicle services operating accounts and inserting provided to charitable veterans organizations. So any profit will go then to charitable veterans organizations. What this does is it frees up plates that at this point in time no one can buy or have because there are no living World War One veterans left, and it allows charitable veteran organizations to auction the plates, make some money for their charitable veteran organizations.
Any questions on the amendment?
Mr. Chair?
President Holberg.
I don't know what unused plates look like. Do they actually have the letters and numbers on them and everything? Are they stamped yet? Or, I mean, is there, if you get your hands on these, is there any way you can put them on a vehicle and drive down the street with them? Or, I mean, I don't know.
You know?
I think there's definitely like security issues with, you know, people looking up plates that are assigned to people that buy them through.
I do have an expert here.
Ms. McCormick, maybe.
We could have Ms. McCormick come.
The phone a friend time.
Yeah.
Ms. McCormick, we should quickly, I presume it's a license plate with the date of the year for the license and everything. Could you explain that to the committee?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Representative Holberg, Pat McCormick with CVS for the record. It would have the date and sticker on it, but it wouldn't have the barcode that we use to on the sticker that we would use to be identifying them, and that would be something law enforcement would know that you need to have that in order to have it be an issued plate to an individual. But yes, it would still have a year and a sticker on it, but it wouldn't be one that would be valid that you could put it on a vehicle.
Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would assume that some type of warning would come with these plates when they sell them, that they say that, you know.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbrook, we would make sure that that was the case, that we would do that. A lot of that part of it we could do offline working with the Department of Veterans Affairs.
And Mr. Chair, this one, does your department support this bill, oppose it, or neutral, or?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, we worked with Representative Slocum on this particular amendment because we did not support the original bill.
Okay. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, so you support this as amended, is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, yes, we did, and that's also in consultation with Department of Veterans Affairs.
And Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, just one more question. Mm-hmm. Have you consulted with Department of Public Safety about their concerns for releasing these plates and the fact that just knowing that it doesn't have a barcode being enough for law enforcement?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, I talked to our commissioner's office, and they were fine with this.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions of Ms. McCormick? Representative Morgan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Slocum, I see a fiscal note here. Did your amendment take care of the fiscal note, or what's the issue there?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I was just going to say something about that. The amendment took care of the fiscal note. There is no fiscal note.
Awesome. Any further questions? Representative Nelson.
Just a comment that there was an article in the paper the week before last about a gentleman in France that passed away, and they said he was the last World War One veteran in France. I think he was over 100, between 100 and 110. So I think you're probably accurate in saying there probably aren't many out there driving.
Any further questions? If not, Representative Slocum renews your motion that House File 3965 is amended, be recommended, passed, and sent to the Finance Division. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. House File 3965 as amended, passed and sent to the Finance Committee. Representative Medore. Representative Medore, you want to move your House File 4055?
I do, Mr. Chair. I also have the read-all amendment, DE, DE2.
You want to move
Sorry, I don't have my glasses on. DE2.
You want to move the DE2 amendment, too?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I am...
Go ahead, sir.
Basically, Mr. Chair and members, what this bill does is it asks for a report to be done to create, in a way, a new standard of operating procedures for construction projects. What we have found is that a lot of small businesses have actually felt that they were not in touch with the lead agencies that were running projects through their community. So what this bill does is it asks for a report to find out what it would cost to actually engage the local business community, cities and counties. It's this morning we were working with the different departments. They all have come to agreement that this is a good bill, and I do have a testifier here, so for I'll just have the Mr. Nathanson.
Representative Medore, you have a fiscal note that indicates savings to the state.
There's a cost. There is a cost to this. Mr. Chair, and maybe when we get to that, we can have some discussion on that as well.
Right.
But we're looking to improve communication opportunities for small businesses, and with that, I'll let Mr. Nathanson.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Eric Nathanson. I'm finance coordinator for the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers. We're a metro-wide business development organization that provides access to capital and business technical assistance for small businesses throughout the five-county area. We, over the last couple of years, have worked with small businesses that have been impacted by transportation projects, and what we found is that the experience that the small businesses have are quite uneven. In some cases, they've been able to get up-to-date, accurate information, but in other cases, particularly where there are a collection of small, very small, ethnic-oriented businesses, it's difficult to get full information out. And we found our organization, in partnership with the city and the county, have actually gone door to door in some of these transportation corridors, working with individual businesses, alerting them to what might be happening, helping them with the marketing, simple things like even preparing maps to show how their customers can find them once the street in front of their door is closed off. And then finally, we have provided some very small cash flow loans with our own funds, although I should say one of our sources of funds is the DEED Urban Initiative Program, loans of about $5,000 to basically help businesses that might have a temporary shortfall in cash flow while the streets close down in front of them, where we've made the determination that after the construction's over, that they'll be able to spring back and, in fact, revive. So our cash flow loans, and again, we're not a government agency, we're a nonprofit, have helped a group of small businesses that had a few rocky months, but we're able to spring back. But I think the key thing is having consistent early information to these organizations and having a contact place where organizations know that they can go for information. And finally, letting MnDOT connect with some of the business assistance organizations that can work with businesses that are in these transportation corridors.
Any questions from the committee? Committee members?
And I do have representatives, Mr. Chair, from all the different agencies here, if anybody would like to speak to them.
Unless there are questions, basically you're coordinating between MnDOT and the business community on that.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Holbert?
Mr. Chair, I'm assuming with the delete-all, we'll see a little different fiscal note.
Well, that's what I Mr. Chair, I think I'd like to ask the agency. We did meet this morning to discuss this, hoping to lower this. We did change the date of the report originally. It was January. We were hoping to see some smaller figures there. I spoke to Corinne, and she advised me to have us talk to the committee, talk to the department here about the cost.
Right, we zoom in, that may want to discuss.
Mr. Chair, I'm assuming this is going to finance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't, you know, we don't need a lot of discussion around it, but it will be interesting to see what a new fiscal note shows.
Someone from MnDOT want to testify in for or against?
Thank you. Or Ms. Park.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Betsy Parker from MnDOT. And I'm so happy to be able to tell you that we worked this out with Representative George.
Okay,
we didn't like the original bill at all, and we don't like the version in the Senate. It was much more complicated than this. But believe it or not, we actually have programs now to reach out to businesses. We have a booklet we use. We have a brochure we use. We've had some really successful interactions with business communities, some that weren't so successful. And I was so happy to meet Mr. Nathanson, because we did not know that people like Mr. Nathanson and his organization existed. And so we really do try to do things the right way, and I think the right thing is to reach out to small businesses to the extent we can. And so we will be revising the fiscal note, I'm sure. We still have a little concern about the date of the report, just because we know you're going to pass last year's policy bill, which had like 10 studies for MnDOT in it, and we know there are four or five more coming in the 2008 policy bill, and they're all due on a short time frame, and we will do our very best, but that's a little bit of a concern. But I just wanted you to know that we're already engaged in this kind of activity, and we will probably try to find a way to do this for more than just the small businesses, because we do this for business regardless of size now, where we do this. But anyway, we are comfortable with the way the bill looks now.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering how small is small here. We got some businesses that were severely impacted. One of them was Fairview Southdale Hospital was when the Crosstown was going to be shut down for a year or whatever it was. They were very concerned about moving people around with their ambulances and what have you, because access was limited and they're not a small business. So are we talking only the Ron Park grocery stores or what?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, the basics of this definition that's in here for small business are, I think, 20 or fewer full-time employees and gross sales or receipts of $1 million or less a year. So Fairview Southdale would not apply to this. But that is the sort of facility that we would be very concerned about communicating with. And we won't be leaving anyone out, because we're agreeing to work on a program to help small businesses.
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, we had a lengthy discussion about that this morning, and actually Ms. Parker was the one that brought this up, and she said, you know, this actually applies to all the businesses in the area, so we want to be sure that we're engaged on all different levels. So they already have decided that they want to look at all levels of business. This bill specific will be addressing small business, but the policy that they develop from the report will be for all businesses.
Thank you.
Any other further questions? If not, Representative Lador, I presume, renews your motion that House... Well, we have to act on the delete-all, to move the delete-all amendment first.
Yes, so then I renew my motion for DE2.
Right. Any questions on the amendment? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? Delete-all DE2 is as amended as first, not as amended. The amendment is passed. Now we have the House File 455 as amended.
That's correct.
Do you recommend the passage to finance? Any questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? House File 4055 as amended, recommended to pass to the Finance Committee. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, member.
We have one more bill. House file 4033. You're going to move the bill, Representative Holberg?
Mr. Chair, if we're going to move really quick, I have a 3:30 appointment in the governor's office, so do you want me to be here?
6:30?
3:30.
Oh, 3:30. We're moving in a hurry. If you move the bill,
right.
Representative Holberg moves House file 4033. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. This, I know, is a late entry, but we're about to complete the Shoe Line Trail Overpass Bridge at Onamia, and the dedication is coming up in about 8 weeks, and it would be at the pleasure of the Onamia community in Mille Lacs County that at the time we dedicate the overpass bridge that we'd be able to officially name it. And Kurt Eastland, after whom this bridge will be named, was a MnDOT employee, and he worked for 10 years in our District 3 office in Baxter. And in 2003, on a beautiful October 24th morning, going to work between Onamia and Baxter, he was broadsided and killed instantly. So his 13-year career with MnDOT and 10 years in District 3 was such a blessing to those of us who work around 169 and depended on his great design talent. He was a design engineer for District 3, and I do ask for your support in naming this bridge after Kurt Eastland. The community of Onamia will use private dollars to pay for the signage, which will be designed by MnDOT, also installed by them. And any other signage will be approved by MnDOT, and I have the approval of the department. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering if you plan to send this separately, or is it going to be rolled into some other bill?
Representative Erickson, I presume this could actually be a consent calendar, really, couldn't it? Representative Holberg?
Mr. Chair, I'd move that House File 4033, we recommended a pass instead of the consent calendar.
I believe it would be. That would, because as, just to reiterate, Representative Erickson indicated there's no cost to the department. That's usually one of the considerations we have for the members of the committee. Signs like these are always paid by private monies, and MnDOT is in coordination with them, but I mean, they're basically private. Ms. Parker, do you have any comment or not? Is this okay? If not, all in favor of the passing House File 4033, be recommend to pass and put on the consent calendar, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? House File 4033 passed with the consent calendar.
Representative
Holberg, this is the last meeting. We may have meetings throughout with no bill. See what happens. We might have some informational meetings throughout the rest of the session. Depends on if we have schedules and rooms.
Thank you.
Any questions from the committee as far as that goes? If not, thank you for your indulgence, and we can get out of here now. Meeting's adjourned.